What is up, everyone? This is Fireside Yankees. My name is Ryan Garcia, and joined by the one and only Chris Drew. Jacob is currently on the IL with a sickness, so
yeah.
We will not have him for this week. He's questionable for next week. Honestly, he probably is going to be around next week. But
I think we call it, what, not doubtful, but hopeful, maybe?
Yeah, hopeful for next week. Yes, probable. There we go. Yeah, I'm confusing my NBA and NFL terminology, because they're like similar, but they're not the same. It's very weird. In baseball, it's just IL or not IL, which I like. I think I like it nice and simple and easy. But Chris, we actually don't have to talk about Cody Bellinger rumors. We can talk about him as a New York Yankee, which is great. There were some news in the pitching market. I mean, a lot actually happened the last week, which is great. And we actually talked about some of it on Fireside Baseball. And if you're watching this now, Chris has a notebook up, so you guys should check that out. If you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating. And if you like this kind of content on our YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe. Chris, I didn't even get to ask how you're doing, man. I really apologize. How are you doing today, my friend?
Dude, it's funny because like we talked for like an hour before we started recording. So like
we did.
I'm good. Like I'm good. You're like we're both good right now. We're having a good day. Obviously, a lot's happening. I mean, I do want to kind of hear some of your takes on the pitching market, but good. No, it's good to not have a Cody Bellinger centric podcast today.
Yeah, and I guess we should just start with the pitching market. I'm just so like we don't have to do the will he or won't he with Bellinger, but on the pitching side, Freddie Peralta goes to the Mets, and I will say I don't want to like sound like I'm coping, but I believe that if he was going to get traded, the Mets were just the most likely outcome, and I'm going to just take that I was prepared for it and it happened. And then to kind of kick Yankee fans while they're down, because why not, right? Like that's just kind of how the Bellinger cycle, the Yankees offseason has gone. They'll sign somebody or trade for somebody, and then something else happens to kind of damper the mood. Mackenzie Gore got traded to the Rangers right after. But Chris, we'll start with Peralta first. When you saw that return, when you saw the trade go down, did you feel like the Yankees missed out on something, or did you feel like, all right, the Mets just had something we didn't?
I mean, honestly, like I felt the Mets were willing to go to a place where I, as a Yankees person, wasn't. I mean, like, I kind of am pretty aligned with Jacob. Like, I like LaGrange and Elmer Rodriguez Cruz. I think to get Peralta, it would have cost you one or both.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, that's not a place where I, Chris Drew, am willing to go, at least at this stage. And maybe I'm a prospect hugger, but that's just where I'm at right now, right? I don't know where you're. Where would you have been willing to go? Like, what would have been the Yankees equivalent to what the Mets gave up?
Well, the report from Bill Madden of the New York Daily News was, like, the nail in the coffin for me even being able to think, okay, the Yankees should have done this. The Brewers asked for George Lombard Jr. That is who they wanted in this deal. I'm not saying you have to think the world of George Lombard Jr. I'm not saying this to even say this is an agreeable statement or a 100% agreeable statement, but it's an understandable statement to say the Yankees did not want to trade George Lombard Jr. for 1 year Freddie Peralta.
Dude, I'll just say it. I'm in full support of not going to that.
I'm
in full support. Here we go. Like Peralta's whatever. He's great. If you're Detroit and you ask for Lombard, okay, got it. It's for Skubal. But with all due respect, 1 year, if you extend him, like it likely takes you out of Skubal next year. I'm not going Lombard. I'm not. I think pretty highly of him. Not as highly as some Yankees Twitter people do, but I do think highly of the prospect.
And I also think it's important to note when it comes to the George Lombard Jr. stuff and whatever, maybe I said this on this podcast as well. If I were to give up a god haul for Freddie Peralta, I'm taking that offer and I'm shopping it to other teams with starters who have more years of control first. Because there is a, as you mentioned, there's a real chance if you were to extend Peralta, that takedown price takes you out of Skubal. And I don't think that's worth it for the New York Yankees. And just as importantly to the New York Yankees, they would have to give up more. It's not just Lombard. And again, at that point, you just take that offer to another team and see what you can get. I do think, again, it's disappointing because you didn't get the player. But it's disappointing not because you could have paid the price, but because a team went a distance you weren't willing to go. It's kind of like with Bellinger almost, where no one was willing to go the length you were willing to go for Bellinger, and you hoped that that would remain the case, and it did. With Peralta, that's not how that worked out, so you didn't get the player. That is how baseball works. It's just the name of the game. We've talked about the farm system. It's got a good top four or five, but outside of that, it's pretty questionable, especially after the Ryan Weathers trade. That showed itself here. You didn't have what the Brewers wanted, with or you did have what the Brewers wanted, but what the Brewers wanted was honestly greater than what they got for the Mets. Like, I think Lombard's better than Williams. And me personally, I think Elmer or LaGrange are better than Brandon Sproat. Like, that's just my opinion of the prospect. But at least Sproat is already in the big leagues.
Are you surprised that the Brewers didn't hold the feet to the fire on Jonah Tong?
You know, I'm not. And the reason I would say that is I like Jonah Tong. I do.
Oh, here we go. Wait. I'll go first. I like Jonah Tong. I don't think Jonah Tong is better than Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, and I think I'm on an island with that.
So that is kind of the direction I was taking this. Like, I think Jonah Tong is good, but not like a hold your feet to the fire prospect. You know what I mean? I think the limitations.
Like, minor league people rank him so highly, and as a baseball field person, and maybe it's because I have an overinflated view of Elmer Rodriguez Cruz. Did you watch their matchup against each other? That's where a lot of my confirmation bias comes from.
Well, for me, for Tong, it's the lack of depth and repertoire. And I really, that kind of is a sticking point for me. And if you look at the way he spins the baseball, and this is not like Jonah Tong sucks.
Really good prospect.
We're talking about, hey, we don't, like, Chris, you probably more align with Baseball America on, like, Elmer's ranking at 59 than you would on,
100%.
Like, baseball MLB pipeline, which is more like in the 80s or 90s. So this is more like saying, I think Jonah Tong's the 65th best prospect in baseball, which the gap between that and the 40th is nothing. Baseball America had him at 44 and Elmer at 59. Like, that gap is nothing if you talk to evaluators and scouts. But I do think Sproat is just such a high floor starter because he throws so many pitches and he throws very hard. He's a high probable starting pitcher. And if you look at what the Brewers tend to develop well, and if you look at like their pitchers and their system, Mizorowski, low slot. Freddy Peralta, low slot. Quinn Priester, low slot. Jonah Tong is not that. Jonah Tong is fastball split change. Look at the Mets organization. They just took Tobias Myers from the Brewers as well. Who's that? If you look at his profile, high IVB fastball, good off-speed pitch. It's kind of just a thing the Mets like, and for the Brewers, that sinker, sweeper, low slot is just what they like. I think this was just two organizations headed by GM David Stearns, who knows the Brewers system in and out and knows what the Brewers like and don't like. These are just two organizations that exchanged pieces that they needed or liked, and I think...
Their preference is matched up, I think.
Right, and that... It is what it is, man. Like, I can't, I'm just not, I'm not upset. It's not like I'm upset at Brian Cashman, what he didn't do. I'm just upset that the Mets had more to give and they did do it. That's really it, you know?
Well, and they were willing to go there. And, you know, and we always thought that, like, I guess I'll ask you, do you think it was an overpay by the Mets or no?
I think objectively, yes, but who cares kind of situation.
Yeah.
And when I say objectively, yes, I mean, okay, let's, like, kind of total out the years left. Sproat has six. Williams has six, although I don't think the world of Jet Williams. I think the Brewers are off on their evaluation of Jet Williams, but that's neither here nor there. If Jet Williams is a league average starting second baseman or shortstop, he could play shortstop, which is definitely a big variable here, and do it this year. If he's, let's say, a six war player over his 6 years, which it doesn't mean he was very impressive, but he did accumulate six war, and then Sproat accumulates, I don't know, seven or eight war. Yeah, you're getting 15 war, and the Mets are probably not getting 15 war out of the 1 year Freddy Peralta plus the 4 years of Tobias Myers. That, quote-unquote, makes it a win for the Brewers, but who cares? The Mets, it's more important for them to get value now than it is in 5 years because Lindor's over the age of 30. And you look at the rotation, like, Manaea's getting older. Holmes is getting older. They kind of need to go now. It has to kind of happen now. Like, the next 2 or 3 years is kind of, let's go get it. So, yes, on paper, it's an overpay, but you don't care because you're the Mets and you're trying to win a World Series.
And my general belief was that the Brewers were only going to move Peralta for the overpay, right?
Yes. And again, based on how they, and even with Jet Williams, I said, like, I don't agree with their evaluation of him. They believed so much in Caleb Durbin that they essentially looked at him as the headliner in a Devin Williams deal. And they were right to pick him. They were right out of the crop of guys you would probably, like, put in that band of prospects you could trade for Devin Williams. Durbin's pretty freaking good. Durbin, in hindsight, is probably going to end up being, what, one of the five or six best players from that prospect class, that, like, the whatever the top 30 from that team was at the end of the year. They're really good with this. They know how to pick. They know how to pick midget infielders, man. They know how to pick them. That's kind of how I view it.
It's crazy because at the time, I thought that Cash just pulled a crazy Cash PR job and got them to bite.
Yeah, and you know, I do remember when he was traded, I was pretty like sad in the sense that they did need infield depth, and I did really like the prospect. But yeah, it did feel like, hey, they how could you not do this deal for the Yankees? Well, the Brewers ended up winning that deal, and that's what they do. Like, they're a smart organization. So even as I say the words, I don't agree with their evaluation on this or that, I realize I didn't agree that Durbin was a headliner, and he was. He was more than good enough.
No, they definitely nailed it. No, I was just curious because, like, obviously, like, I didn't want to overpay for Peralta. I was more belief opportunistic. I'm also I wasn't after they pulled off the one deal. I wasn't like over panicked for another top end starter.
Yeah, that was the so there were two sides of the coin for me for the Ryan Weathers trade. One was they could use more of their pitching depth to acquire a starter. But the other side was you no longer have to do something absolutely stupid to go get a starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. Would trading, let's say, LaGrange, I said I would trade LaGrange and Heald for Peralta. Is that an overpay? Yes, but it's not, in my opinion, beyond stupid. Lombard and Elmer for Peralta is stupid. That is a stupid thing for an organization to do. I don't, like, Weathers prevents you from having to do that. And I know that's really hard to hear. I understand it's not the sexy name. It's not the guy you wanted. I get it. I understand.
He's your safety net, which is weird because his elbow might be pulled pork. Who knows?
Right.
Safety net in this.
He's your, he gives you the ability to say, we're going into spring training with enough arms to get through spring training. Because even if he gets hurt, it's not that if he gets hurt, the odds of somebody else getting hurt is lower, but the overall as a team, the odds of you not having five starting pitchers that are capable going into spring training is pretty much, it's lower than where it was before you acquired him, and he's healthy going into spring training. The question is how long he's going to last in season for me, not necessarily can he get through spring training, at least for me. I could be wrong. I mean, spring training is a high injury, it's a high frequency of injuries in spring training, but I think he's capable of getting through it.
I do have a question in terms of Yankees' approach and maybe where Cashman's at. Do you think that the Schlittler success story maybe stops them from overpaying with a lot of guys that, you know, are kind of, or not a lot of guys, but two guys that are on the cusp of being big league pitchers?
Well, I think, and I could be wrong here, who's the last, like, good project starter the Yankees have given Matt Blake? Not a prospect, like, project starter. They acquired this guy and they go, he's really talented, go and get him.
I don't know if they have given him one.
Is, like, Tyone, I guess, counts as one? Nestor technically counts as one?
Yeah, I guess. See, when you say project, I think about someone with, like, an outlier fastball with, like, control issues.
Oh, I just meant...
is where I go.
The reason I mentioned Tyone is because I want to give him props for what he did in Pittsburgh. Like, he was freak. Like, he had outlier fastball velocity in Pittsburgh for a little bit. Yeah. So that's the one reason I'm going to file that in, even if the outcome wasn't sexy. But they did get that final year where he made, like, 33 starts and had a sub-4 ERA. That's not a sexy outcome, but that is a better outcome than what they traded away. They traded away nothing for him. Rowasney Contreras had a couple of, like, months where I was like, oh, shoot, you overpaid. And then he's in Japan right now, I think, so... there's that. And in the situation of Nestor, I mean, Nestor was a complete success story. They hit it out the park with Nestor. And I think Weathers is the most talented of, like, the trio of Warren, Heal, and Weathers. Like, I've kind of thought about this for a while. If it was a start for my life, and I have the guarantee that Weathers has done whatever work he's going to do with the Yankees, not saying it's going to pan out successfully, but I know that he is going to pitch the way that Matt Blake would want him to pitch. Even if it's not doing so successfully, has the game plan and kind of like whatever that may be or whatever sinker grip they're teaching him, I would take him in a start for my life over Heal and Warren. That is where I look at it.
Do you think he's more quote unquote pitcher talented than Heal?
He throws harder than Heal. I think he has better stuff than Heal. He has better command than Heal. Weathers' issue is availability, not ability. And I've made this comparison before. But if you look at the Los Angeles Dodgers and the method in which they acquire and invest in starting pitching, they bet on your availability, not your ability. They paid Tyler Glasnow $100+ million, knowing damn well he was never going to return on an investment in the regular season. Blake Snell is a pitcher who I'm sure their models also dictated would not return an investment during the regular season. But you do not doubt their ability. You doubt their availability. And for the Yankees... and if you're trying to win a World Series, you need to think about your regular season team, yes, but you also need to think about your postseason team. Is Chris Bassett taking a start for you in the postseason or making some massive leap next year that's going to help you get there? No. Ryan Weathers could make a leap that gets you there.
I mean, they're essentially betting on the upside in their lab and kind of fingers crossed on the injury, which is, I guess, it's a way to live, and it could really cripple you. But at the same time, if you do make it to the end with, you know, a couple of your guns healthy, it makes you just a ridiculous team because you're going to get quality back-end playoff starters, right? Like, if you had to start Luis Hill in a playoff game, like that.
Yeah, and I think last year Luis Hill was just bad. Like, I thought he was a bad pitcher, and I got a lot of shit for saying it, but I just don't care about his ERA. I don't care about your ERA as much as I care about your stuff and your strikeout rates, and I'm trying to project what you will do, not what you did. That's a big part of player evaluation, player acquisition.
He brought the velo down and the walks didn't go down. And that, I think, was concerning and kind of like the big no-no when you talk about like guys who are pitchers, right? Like you don't want that velo to come down and the control still be an issue.
Yeah, and I want to reiterate, I think there's significant risk in this staff. I don't want to sit here and make it seem like I think nothing can go wrong with this group. But what I'm sitting here and saying really is they've got talent. They've got enough arms to get through spring training. They've got talent coming back from the IL. At least one of Rodon or Cole, I imagine, will be a pretty effective starting pitcher for them this year. Fried pitched like a top 10 pitcher last year. Schlittler looked great. I just need one of Warren, Weathers, or Heel, and I'm not really banking that much on Heel, but I just need one of them to take a step forward, or in Heel's case, turn the clock back a year. And I don't think I'm asking, like, it's not like we're talking about Carlos Carrasco hoping he turns the clock back to 2016. We're talking about a left-handed, I forgot who tweeted this, and I'm really upset I don't remember this. If I told you the Yankees were going to open next season, and they've got this major league ready starting pitcher prospect who is younger than Warren, younger than Heel, is a left-handed pitcher, he throws 97 miles per hour, he's got a nasty changeup and a nasty sweeper, we would all sit here and go, this guy needs to make the opening day roster. If I just replaced Ryan Weathers, Savant Page, and put Elmer Rodriguez Cruz and slapped the prospect number on him, oh my God, he's got to make the team out of camp. Like, right. I think there's a little bit of, and I'm going to go on a little bit of a side tangent here, and I apologize, Chris. There's a lot of bullshit that gets talked about with the Yankees, I think, and I'm kind of at the point where it kind of sucks to talk about things that require nuance with the team. Because, like, the rotation, for example, it can no longer be enough to say there's risk, but there's also talent, and I see what the Yankees are trying to do here, and I understand their vision. I don't know if it's going to work, but I understand it. You can't say that. It's got to be, this group stinks, Brian Cashman, what a moron, Ryan Weathers is their only addition. I just can't, like, it's such a counterproductive form of discourse. Like, I'll kind of reference something that Joel Sherman said today. He was on his podcast, and he said, where are all the people who said that they weren't going to spend over $300 million and that Grisham was going to stop them from doing that and bringing back Bellinger? And I remember I tweeted, he hit the nail on the head with that. Just that clip. There is no other additional piece of information he provides. I am simply talking about that clip. Well, Brian, you're telling us to be happy with this team. You're a cuck, this, that. I didn't tell you any of those things. All I said was, yeah, people said Trent Grisham was going to stop them from signing Bellinger, and it didn't. It didn't have any effect on it. They paid him more money than I thought they were going to pay him, that being Bellinger.
And also, like, the Grisham thing ended up working out because, like, Grisham, the outfielder market ended up being way more, I guess, aggressive or lucrative than that $20 million would suggest.
I saw people suggesting, well, why didn't we sign Harrison Bader? I can't. Chris, and again, I'm really sorry that this is like the tangent I'm going on, but I feel like I just can't have the conversation about the Yankees. I just want to get to spring training. I just want to see the games. At this point, I'm just like, I just want to see the games. Because everything's going to go wrong for the Yankees and everything's going to go right for everybody else. That's kind of like the way this plays out usually. And I simply think it's really, really like counterproductive to the conversation we're trying to have about the Yankees, which is what's wrong with them? What's good about them? What should we look forward to? What should we be concerned about? I feel like it's like, I'm not asking for fans to have a nuanced conversation, look at Fangraph's depth chart and do hours of research because it's not a fan thing. Like fans are, it's short for fanatic. I'm asking for people who like are trying to cover the team or talk about the team in a consistent manner. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, consistent, thoughtful manner, I think. I think, finally.
To just give in. Like, if there's something you're wrong about, just give in on it. Like, you okay, like, I was, let's say, Everson Pereira. I thought Everson Pereira was going to be pretty good when he was a prospect. He sucks. He's terrible. You give in at some point. He's bad. It is what it is. You got to just give in. You don't just go, all right, well, you know, he's bad because, you know, the Yankees didn't play him. I was like, no, he sucks. He can't make contact. It's unfortunate. It is what it is. Injuries, can't make contact, a million things. Hey, the Yankees signed Bellinger and Grisham. Grisham affected nothing. Well, who are they going to sign with that money? They weren't signing Framber Valdez because they weren't going to sign Framber Valdez if they didn't give a one-year contract out to Grisham. They were just going to pocket that money or sign Harrison Bader. And no offense to Harrison Bader, I really wanted no piece of Harrison Bader this winter. I'm very glad he's actually a Giant.
Where are the Giants going to play him?
They're going to play him in center and put Jung-Hoo Lee in the corner, which I think for them actually works because
That's what I thought too. But I know, yeah, obviously, like when you give Jung-Hoo Lee over $100 million,
right? For me, like that contract is looking pretty rough, but you can't do sunk cost fallacy. You need to improve your outfield defense. Their outfield defense stinks. Helio Ramos, Luis Matos, and yeah. Jung-Hoo Lee in center. Like, no, you just can't do that. Harrison Bader, I don't think he's going to even hit that much, but I think it'll be valuable because of it. I think it's really stupid the Phillies signed Adolis Garcia instead of him, but that's a fireside baseball discourse. I'll save my Phillies rant for there.
I was just curious.
I realize I'm going to end up giving away too many. I'm going to give away the goods. I'll keep the goods for now.
Oh, no, you're fine. No, honestly, that's a discussion point because I talked about him on the notebook on fireside baseball. But
yeah.
We're going back to Yankees. Okay, back to Yankees.
Yes, back to Yankees. Side right. Tangent.
People don't know how to talk about this offseason. People are frustrated by this offseason. I am okay with this offseason. And I also, like, I think because of Cam Sutler, like, back to my original point, him being such a success, I think I'm higher on Elmer Rodriguez Cruz and LaGrange because of it. And if Matt Blake can give me what I think he can from Weathers, like, I think that, you know, it's not – look, here we go. Say what you about Cashman. But Cashman throughout the season tends to make the move to improve from the beginning to the end of the year. This year, you're going into the season at a better spot than you were last year. And last year during the season, what did Cashman do? He improved the roster the more the season went on. 2 years ago when they made the World Series, say what you will about him. Obviously, like Soto was the big offseason move. But during the season, they made the steps to get better throughout the season. And one of them was adding Jazz Chisholm. Like, that was a huge deal. The fact that they're going into this year better off than they ended last year, and we know that Cashman will always make the move to improve during the season, I feel really good.
Yeah, and look, I'm not even saying, like, I think this offseason, my personal stance on it, and, you know, I think it's a little bit more pessimistic than yours in terms of, like, I'm not sure I'm okay with it. I accept that this is where we're at, but I want, like, I need a reliever. I need them to complete the offseason is my kind of MO right now. But I'm not, like, this is a good team. And if you think it's a problem that they're not great and they're just good, like, that's fine. But they are a good team. That's what they are. The Yankees, there is, like, just a problem with talking about them as a good team. And anything, we don't have to make up things to criticize or have, like, real talking points. They didn't fill their third base hole last year. Might have cost them the division. If they don't add to their bullpen, that's going to be a really shaky unit. That's a thing you can criticize them on. We don't have to do the whole Brian Cashman actually offered the qualifying offer to Trent Grisham and hoped he didn't take it. He made an offer that he hoped Trent Grisham wouldn't take. We don't have to do that, right? Like, we don't have to make up something really stupid to try and, like, you're frustrated. Damn, the Yankees won a World Series in 16 years. We're going to go on 17 if they don't win it this year. Like, that's, yeah, you could be upset about that. Just say that. Like, that's totally cool. Just say it. Just say, hey, I'm upset they didn't win the World Series. Yeah, that's cool. It's fair. Like, if your standard is World Series or bust, that's what you've been growing up. That's what every Yankee fan that was born in the 2000s or earlier has been raised on. Totally fine to keep that standard and say, I never want to lower that standard. That's cool. That's totally fine. That's cool to me. I don't have an issue with that. I think that's totally cool. Like, that rocks. Keep the standard. What makes the Yankees that they win. It's nothing else. It's not the pinstripes. Not the lack of a last name. It's not the fucking beard rule. It's none of that. It's the fact that they win. That's what makes the Yankees the Yankees. That's why the Dodgers feel like they have this mystique to them, because they win. Like, that's really it, man.
They're the boogeyman. They're the Death Star. They right. are, you know, evil. This evil empire.
It's not. There's literally nothing else to it. There's nothing else that makes you special. And don't tell me it's just the money, because Cohen spends a lot of money, and there's not an added mystique to the Mets that separates them from.
No, the winning is the mystique across every right. sport. The winning is the mystique, not the payroll.
Again, it's like the Chiefs. The mystique with the Patriots. If it wasn't Tom Brady winning Super Bowls. It's not like they would lose their mystique. If Drake May wins the Super Bowl this year, they're going to have this. You're going to still hate the Patriots the same fervor you hated the Patriots when we had Tom Brady.
It's all in culture with Alabama. Like, it was right. Their mystique.
If Alabama wins a national championship, no one's going to go, oh, but it's not Saban. They're going to go, I hate these guys. Literally, you know, like that. That's just how sports work.
Kind of Ohio State, like going from Urban Meyer to Ryan Day.
Yeah, no one. No, Ryan Day went from, you got to fire this guy to, all right, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, so the mystique is back.
Yeah, like it's winning. Winning fixes everything, and I hope the Yankees win it all because it would fix everything. But if they don't, I'm not going to rewrite the story or tell it any differently. But a player who should help them win ball games this year is Cody Bellinger. Now that he's back, I think a big part of the conversation now becomes, you've got left field locked up for 5 years in theory. Could be 2 years if he opts out. You kind of hope it's 2 years if you're the Yankees. You've got Judge locked up for the remainder of his contract, possibly for the rest of his career. What do you do with Spencer and Jason? I think for Spencer, it's a little clearer because center field is not locked up, but he kind of has to perform this year to prove it. For Jason, though, like, the Yankees just paid $55 million to not play him this year. Chris, do you take that as they're done with him, or this is just a one-year pushback for his timeline? Like, how do you read the situation for Jason and Spencer?
I think that with Jason in particular, if there is a deal that makes this team better right away to help Aaron Judge in his prime, you absolutely will move him. I think that they will actively be trying to move him. If they can get somebody to give them equal value or maybe slight overpay based on the upside. With that being said, I don't think they're going to move him just for the sake of moving him. I think they're okay with waiting another year. And also, like, I think there are going to be plenty of at-bats for him. And then the other part of it is, I think Jason Dominguez can develop while not getting a ton of at-bats in New York. I mean, they showed the ability to kind of at least improve and increase the upside of Trent Grisham without having him play at all over Alex Verdugo the year before. So I think it's one of those things where, like, they would trade him if there is the right partner, but they don't have to trade him right now, is kind of my stance. I don't know where you're at with it.
I'm a little more of the mindset that I think they do have to get rid of, they have to move on from Jason, okay, because I only think his value is going to go down. Now, I'm not trading him for nothing. If there's truly nothing to trade Jason for, you keep him. Like, you can't do something stupid, right? We talked about this with Freddie Peralta. If I'm not going to do something stupid to get Freddie Peralta, mm-hmm, I'm sure as hell not going to do something stupid to get rid of Jason Dominguez. But I think the bar for what is acceptable to trade Jason for is going to have to be lower than people think, is kind of what I'm getting at. For Spencer, if his value, and I do think his value is pretty inconsistent across the league, and I'm not sure some teams would even trade for him in the first place because of the strikeouts. You have an open center field spot. He's a high ceiling enough player that, no, I'm willing to just ride it out. If he ends up, if he ends up being Floreal and you never get anything from him, that's fine for me. He's got too much upside, and it doesn't seem like there's going to be a standalone player you can get in a one for one swap that's going to make it worth it. So I'll hold on to him. For Jason, it's both for the player's sake and for the team's sake, but primarily for the team's sake, if I'm the GM. I just think you can get something for him. I think you can get, and I've suggested, like, a quality reliever with years of control. I think that's less than what you'd want to trade him for, but in a one-for-one swap, probably one of the better outcomes you can get. I just don't think there's a rental starter out there you're going to be trading Jason for. Like, I wouldn't trade him for, like, Chris Bubik, just knowing his injury history. I'm a little bit skeevy on that. I could sign up for taking the risk on Bubik at the right price, just because if his arm explodes at the end of the year, I wash my hands clean of that. You know what I mean? Like, it's not my problem. It's kind of barbaric, but it kind of is how it is, guys. I really hate to say it. I mean, it's how, look, if you're a team,
how the game works.
It's just how you think. Look, the Cubs are like, hey, dude, we don't have to pay Edward Cabrera. Like, he tears his UCL. We win the World Series this year, and he tears it next year.
Right.
I even said on the podcast, I was like, if he pitches well in year one and then blows out his arm in year two and the Yankees win the World Series in year one, all right, brother. Go rest up. We'll see you later, bro. We'll see you when we see you, dog. But I'm not trading Jason for 1 year of this guy's elbow could explode. And I know we said that with Weathers, but Bubik, it's way more apparent, the injury risk. I would trade Jason again for, like, it's not just a quality, like the guy who I'm pitching the eighth inning in March and in October. For 3 years, 4 years, that's someone I would trade Jason for.
That's a deadline move, right? Like, that's a team that's selling that has a good reliever. Like, that's not a move to make now.
And the other thing, too, is you never know who's available, and you never know what's going to go down. Fernando Cruz was out of nowhere. The acquisition of Williams was out of nowhere. Their acquisition of Weathers was unprompted. The Yankees are pretty good at that. I'll never forget hopping out the shower on a school night and seeing that Gary Sanchez has been traded to the Twins, because that was the first tweet we got from Heyman. That stuff just happens. And I recognize that could happen for the Yankees, but I also recognize, again, like, the only risk I have, the only concern I have is that they keep Jason. He doesn't play much. His tank kind of stock, his stock tanks more. And we're talking about Jason Dominguez the same way we're talking about, like, Miguel Andujar. And I really don't want to do that. I really, like,
especially for the player, because there is a sense the player might need a fresh start too.
And I don't think the player's bad. Like, I don't get the sense that Jason Dominguez sucks at baseball. I just don't think he's a superstar.
It's like, you remember when Ben Rice hit that 3-home run game and then proceeded to, like, hit, like,
yeah,
like 100 for the rest of his time up? It's like, I think I have some of that in me with Jason Dominguez, because he had the 3-home run game, including the grand slam against the A's. Now I know, like, launching pad park, Little League park, whatever. But it's like, I know the power potential's there, and I also watched him over time get better with more consistent at-bats. Like, he's just downloading information. So I think because I saw Ben Rice go from 3 home runs, but people thought he couldn't hit, obviously he was super unlucky, to then adding some extra weight, and all of a sudden those, you know, those warning track balls were home runs. I just feel like, you know, more, I guess I trust the Yankees hitting development maybe a little bit more than I should.
What I also will say with Jason, and I could be wrong on this, is I think there's a little bit of Glaber here, where Glaber's career is going to be looked back on in 10 years, people are going to go, this guy's way better than we remember.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are just, this is the issue, and I really hate seeing this with, like, international free agents and shit like that. Like, this really grinds my gears. If you're talking about a 16-year-old and saying, this guy's the next Barry Bonds, this guy's the next Mickey Mantle, this guy's got generational,
Mike,
shut
Trout.
Up. Yeah, like, I saw a tweet where it was like, this 13-year-old is the best, is a generational prospect
ever. Oh, right. My God, we saw the same tweet, yo.
Dude, that guy's in 8th grade. Shut up. Shut up. All you're doing is setting these kids up to fail. Because if they're not that good, if they're just solid everyday big leaguers, they're looked at as
failures.
Right. And I mentioned Glaber in this because, dude, I didn't realize how, like, decent his career has been. I'm saying decent. How good his career has been.
Mm-hmm.
Gleyber Torres is a career 337 on base, 770 OPS, 114 WRC+, 18.5 wins above replacement. He's not even 29. He just turned 29.
Good player.
He's got a pretty good chance at being a 30-win player in his career, yeah, who picks up maybe 250 home runs. He's already 1,000 hits. Good chance he can get to 2,000. And we're going to look at, like, this is insanity. And the way it relates to Jason is, Jason could end up just being a 2.5-win outfielder who is a really good hitter, can't field, runs the bases well. That could be the extent of Jason Dominguez. And he ends up putting up, like, 20 WAR in his career, and he doesn't play for the Yankees for his entire career. Is what it is, bro. Like, that would be a good IFA outcome. I'm sorry. It's a good international free agent outcome. Yeah, I just agree.
You know what it feels like? Have you seen the meme? You've seen it, I'm sure. It's Cam Newton talking about Keon Coleman.
Yes.
That's what it feels like the Yankees fan base is going through currently with Jason Dominguez.
Well, it's what people are doing to prospects, yeah, in baseball. Like, I think this is more of a new age thing, too, because
it's a social media thing.
Yes. Like, I don't want to I'm not trying to disparage John Heyman specifically, because I understand. Like, I've said stupid shit, and I'm going to say stupid shit. John Heyman tweeting out that the Yankees wouldn't trade Spencer Jones for anybody other than Paul Skeens. What good does that do for the player?
Nothing. It does nothing good for the
what,
player.
What good? That's not even true. If the Yankees could trade Spencer Jones for Hunter Green, they would have done it. They would have done it before the sentence is over.
Yeah.
They would be rushing to Cincinnati to get something on paper and drug test the GM and give them the breathalyzer to make sure they're sober so they can legally have that hold up in court. That's what they would do. So
yeah, that tweet was crazy. That tweet got Spencer Jones so much unnecessary hate, even though after that is when he went on that crazy run, right?
I think this actually precedes a bad run for Jones. So this was right after the trade deadline. and Jones ends up pulling his back or like having back spasms. He doesn't.
Okay, wait, no. Right after the trade deadline, he remember during like the day after the trade deadline, I think was the final day of his crazy heater, right?
I think it was. I'm just saying August is when he had a bad stretch, and I remember this tweet coming back on my timeline during August, and it's like, dude, I knew the second he tweeted that this would only come back to hurt Spencer Jones because he could be a 3-win player and people would still think it's a bad thing to not have traded him for anybody other than Scooble, Skeens, which is like fine. Like, obviously you would trade Spencer Jones for more than just Paul Skeens. Obviously, even if he is a 3-win player in his career. I think it all ties back to number one, what are the Yankees going to do with these two? And number two, even if they're not stars, like, if they're quality big leaguers, I'm pretty happy with the outcome because it's cheap, cost-controlled production unless you spend money elsewhere.
Who do you have more faith in being a quality big leaguer, Spencer or Jason, if I can put you on the spot like that?
I keep going back and forth because for Jones, he can play center field, and I think he can do it in the big leagues and do it at a pretty quality level.
Yeah.
But for Jason, he can hit, and that's really hard to do. Like, it's hard to hit, man, and I think he can hit.
Do we have numbers on Spencer Jones' bat speed out of curiosity?
I don't think we have, a large sample size. We might have, a couple of swings from spring training, but, yeah, I'm not entirely sure. With Spencer, though, what I will say is, Zips is out. Zips really likes him. Depth Charts really likes him. And then other projection systems dislike him. When I say like him, I mean that they think he's going to be an average-ish hitter. Because if Spencer Jones is a league average hitter, he's going to be a good player. He's a center fielder. For Jason, he's got to really hit. There's a lot of pressure on the bat. Or honestly, just play right field at Yankee Stadium. That's the other solution that I think works. And that's why you think I think he has trade value. I think the Rays or the Reds, they kind of need corner outfield support. I look at the Rays outfield specifically. And not to say that I would love the idea of Jason Dominguez getting to develop with the Rays, but it's Chandler Simpson in left and Jake Fraley in right. They got Jake Fraley off waivers, so it's not like a high investment player either. They quite literally picked them up off the scrap heap.
And Chandler's a horrible defender, and I'm a big Chandler Simpson fan, Georgia Tech grad. He's a horrible defender. He's worse than Jason to me.
He's really bad out there, and he doesn't really have the pop. And if you still value him as a big leaguer,
doesn't really have the pop, dog. Can you tell everybody the last time he hit a home run at any level?
Was it? Hold on. Inside the park or out of the yard?
I believe I do not believe he has a single out of the yard home run since college.
That is what I was going to say because he does have one in 2024, but that was an inside the parker.
Yeah, dude. Literally zero pop. And his defense is bad, dude. When they played the Yankees, was it Judge that hit a home run dead center? And he ran
you thank God he's not a good defensive player. Because if this guy could play defense in center field, he would be the most Rays Ray of all time. He would be the worst player to play ever. This is just Kevin Kiermaier with another outlier tool if he was a really good defender. And Kevin Kiermaier annoyed the shit out of me because he had an outlier tool and it was his defense. And for some reason could hit home runs at Yankee Stadium only. So it was just... Yeah, just he pissed me off so much. But not that I hate the guy, but
yeah, I'm just looking through it, I don't know.
I have a fun mock trade idea for you.
You said what?
I have a mock trade idea for you.
What you got?
Okay. Would you trade? I'm going to give you three players. They're all either on the Reds or the Rays. And it's just a one for one, and I'm going to ask you, would you or would you not trade Jason Dominguez for this player? I tweeted this out. Graham Ashcraft. Would you trade Jason Dominguez for Graham Ashcraft, the reliever on the Reds?
I would.
Okay. Would you trade Jason Dominguez? Oh, yeah. Okay. I would. Would you trade Jason Dominguez for Drew Rasmussen? I feel like that one's a little... I think he's better than Ashcraft, but I don't know.
I would as well.
Would you trade him for Shane McClanahan?
No.
I agree. I agree on all of them.
Okay.
I just wanted to get the sense of what is... Because I think Graham Ashcraft's probably the worst player I'd trade Jason for. Is that crazy?
Not crazy. I don't know.
But you get what I'm saying.
I'm about to start prospect hugging, dude. So go.
but you know what I'm saying? He might be the worst. He's probably the worst player I would actually trade Jason for.
That's fair.
So the bar's got to be that or higher. If the only thing you can get is worse than that, then I'm good off of it. Is that
that checks?
Okay,
no, that checks.
Again, man, I really am curious to see what they're gonna do, and I'm gonna be real with you, man. The funniest outcome is gonna be John Carl Stan's getting hurt, and Jason's gonna get playing time, and we're gonna all forget this happened.
Dude, I think there's gonna be so many at bats for him, because here we go. Like a year ago, who was there at bats for because of the Giancarlo injury?
It was Ben Rice.
Yeah, Ben Rice. But here we go. There's no Paul Goldschmidt this year.
Yes.
Ben Rice, and he's going to take a step back on his Savant page, so get ready for that, obviously, because he was platoon heavy last year. And I just think he's going to get enough at-bats this year, which is why I'm, like, pretty hesitant. And look, which is why I think if you do move him, it's a deadline move, not a right-now move.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, I think when it comes to Jason, when it comes to this trade market, like, dude, if teams aren't, it takes two to tango, right? We can sit here and say, oh, I would trade him for Drew Rasmussen, but the Rays are like, nah, I'm good. I want prospects. I don't want a major league player. Mm-hmm. Then you're shit out of luck, man. Like you just like the Nationals with Mackenzie Gore took five prospects to get him. Not a single major leaguer. You're just shit out of luck. What it is.
What are your thoughts on that? Did you think that was an overpay?
I understood it for the Rangers because, like, this, the AL isn't good enough for you to be swayed away from contending. And if everything goes right, that is a disgusting rotation.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it's a lot, but I don't think that's a bad thing. He's also an extension candidate. This is the one thing that I think also is not talked about with the Yankees in this trade market. They were not extending a single one of these pitchers. Mm. They're not extending Freddy Peralta. They were not extending Mackenzie Gore. The Rangers could extend Mackenzie Gore. The Mets might be willing to extend Peralta and still play Skubal. Maybe. I don't know. That's TBD. I don't even know if Peralta wants to take an extension that badly. But I don't see a reason why the Yankees should pay a pitcher when Skubal's a year away from free agency. And I get it. Like, everyone's going to say, they're not going to be in. They're not going to be in. If they're not going to be in on him, they're not going to pay a pitcher.
That's generally where I'm
at. Right? Like, that's... Yeah. If they're not going to pay the best of the best, they're not going to pay a B-plus tier guy. They're not going to give... They're going to go, hey, I don't want to give Skubal $40 million, but I do want to give Mackenzie Gore $25 million. It's like, no, what? No, no, you don't want to do either of those things. If you don't want to do A, you're not going to want to do B. We kind of saw it with this free agency. They didn't go, hey, Framber's out there, opportunistic. They went, I have no interest in this guy. Mm-hmm. Bichette, I have no interest in this guy. Like, they just don't show any interest in these players. Now... Chris, the last thing I wanted to touch on was the international free agent kind of stuff that was going on. Yeah. The Yankees lost two commits. They lost Wandy to the Mets. I can't pronounce his last name. I'm not going to attempt to. And then Marion De La Rosa. That one first reported, I think, by Yankees Farm. And so I want to credit them on that. But
he does a good job, too.
Yeah, they do a really good job with prospect coverage, especially on the international free agent side. So they lost their top commits from this year and next year, but they do actually have a director now. They fired Danny Rowland to enter the year. They hire Mario Garza, who I was kind of stunned as to how long he's been in the organization. He's 44 years old, and he's been in the organization since 2010, I think, jeez, as a coach, which is insane.
Yeah. That's a lot of work. It's 16 years.
Well, it paid off.
This is surprising they went internal and it took this long.
You know, that's something I really thought about. And I think for me at least, like, I don't think it's wrong to hire internally inherently, but I do think you walk away going, shit, like, we did take a while. We did take a while.
That's a yellow flag for me, because to me that's like, okay, they didn't get who they wanted to get. So that's the only thing that comes to my mind.
Yeah, it's also January, so you wonder, like, the external candidates, were they even that good anyways? Did you get the crop of external candidates you were looking for? Now, I don't think this is a bad promotion from within. I think if you're going to promote from within, this is actually a pretty good candidate to do so with. And the reason I say that, Chris, is because the timeline of when Garza started getting real traction in the organization. So he was part of their Latin American operations before the COVID pandemic. And in that offseason, so this is the Cole offseason, 18 to 19, Sam Breen gets hired as the director of pitching, and he brings in Matt Blake with him. He recommends that they bring in Matt Blake. Matt Blake comes along. Dylan Lawson gets promoted to their hitting director. Dylan Lawson plays a big role in developing Ben Rice, in helping develop Austin Wells, in the development of Jason, all those guys. And obviously on the pitching side, Schlittler, Warren, you know, Rodriguez is hopefully the next man up. LaGrange, you hope, is another man that you can add to that thing. Keel. They also promote Garza, and he goes from part of their Latin American ops to their director of player development. And in the 6 years that he has been their director of player development, the Yankees minor league organizations have consistently produced pretty good talent given their draft slots. Have they found a superstar? No. Have they been in position to draft a superstar? Also no.
Not really, yeah.
They haven't produced a superstar. Have the Dodgers produced a superstar from within over this time span?
No, I got an argument online about that. I was like, no, I think not.
Will Smith technically broke out in 19. So I'm looking at 2020 onward. Is there Walker Buehler's probably the best player they've produced? But he was 2018. That's not really
earlier. He's part of one of those early Vandy boys.
Yeah, so point is, you know, the draft, the way that the CBA's changed has really made it hard to do the whole I'm a really good team and I'm going to just draft superstars. You can't really do that, which is quite unfortunate for teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers. But imagine the Dodgers with the ability to draft like a Paul Skenes talent. That would just be insane. So all this is to say the Yankees have produced like a decent amount of big league talent. And they've also very importantly been able to trade a lot. So
yeah.
Garza to me, this now just because you can develop or run development doesn't mean you can scout. That's an important thing to say. But I do expect them to be better at scouting, mainly because they were really bad at it in the IFA side of things for the last few years. You may go, Ryan, why don't you guys talk about Roderick Arias anymore? It's because he's not
very good.
Yeah, he's not a top 30 guy anymore. Even no,
which is crazy because he was a guy that at one point was slotted higher than Lombard.
At one point, dude, he was a slam dunk top 100 on Baseball America. This is the guy who was supposed to be the guy. Like, I think he got paid more than Jason. I could be wrong on that, but he got paid like a similar amount to Jason, and he hasn't gotten out a single A.
It would check if he got more than Jason just because of the time.
Right. Brando Maia was another high investment signee. It hasn't worked. And, you know, you can point to development, and I don't think it would be inaccurate on the surface to say that, but then you start to dig into, like, you look at the pro side, the pro draft, or the amateur draft side, and the pro side, too. The Yankees have gotten more value out of their draft picks than they do out of their IFA signees. And on the pro side, they've done a pretty solid job, especially under Rousen, of they bring in these veteran guys, and they get more out of them. Grisham, Jazz, Bellinger, those are, like, the three immediate ones that pop to my mind, is left-handed athletic bats who really took a leap forward with the Yankees.
I mean, Grisham's leap does not get talked about enough. Like to not play and then to be a 30 home run guy the following year. I mean, WRC plus what? OPS plus, I think it was like 128.
They haven't invested as much as you would think in their position player side, and they have gotten a pretty good chunk of value out of it.
Yeah.
So that to me is pretty cool for them. But again, I think that it's hard for me to believe that you just didn't have your developmental people in the IFA side. That's hard for me to buy. It's probably more likely that you just haven't been picking the right guys. And it's also something I believe on the pitching side, because if you want to say like the hitting side's flawed, and I wouldn't fully disagree with that. I think there are some things, like there aren't enough minor league guys getting to the major leagues and hitting for the Yankees. There also isn't a lot of talent that they keep, but that's different. The pitching side, you can't tell me the pitching, there are flaws there. Their pitching development is infallible, in my opinion. There is very little things you can really poke holes in. They haven't produced that many IFA pitchers. They haven't signed that many top-tier IFA pitchers. Actually, I gotta correct myself. They have produced like a decent amount given what the median IFA becomes. Like Johnny Brito and Randy Vasquez are big leaguers. Luis Seal, they didn't sign him, but they did trade for him. He's a big leaguer. I've got to give credit for Carlos LaGrange, who was $10,000, one of the smallest bonuses, and he's an absolute monster. But there's no hitters. There's not a single IFA hitter I can think of outside of Jason, who is a big leaguer, or I think is going to be a big league lock.
Do we think LaGrange plays this year? Not to totally sidetrack. Do you think he gets his big league debut this year? Or you think he's a year away?
I think he ends up doing it this year.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because,
I'm asking on the guys of like, okay, like, is he a development story, like PR win? I guess.
Dude, I think if he ends up being a big leaguer, it's a win because you signed him for $10,000. Like,
yeah,
just that alone. But
Like, is it viewed as like an outlier? Or is it viewed like a huge win for the department? So I guess
I think it's a massive win if he's a good big leaguer. It's an incredible, like, that's the type of story you tell. You hang your banner on that. And that's why, like, I don't think Rowland's the only person to blame in this. You're the only, I think blame goes up too, right? Like, hey, Brian Cashman, you kept Danny Rowland for all these years. And when you fired him in a time period where you lost commits. Like, that's on you as well.
Yeah.
On the owner, Hal Steinbrenner, like, that's on you as well, right? When you've got a employee who isn't doing their job correctly and your firing of them results in you losing the ability to import more employees, and also you take a long time to replace the employee, like, that's not good, right? I don't want to gloss over that.
That's organizational miss, right?
Right.
Like, that was my big complaint, how long it took, because it felt like it was just dragging out forever.
And yeah, you can't.
On the timeline, you see, you know, the Yankees have lost a commitment from so-and-so. I was like, okay, here we go. Now, I as a college football guy, I don't view those as the end of the world, because I know that, like, you need to hit on one of those every 5 years.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things where I'm not going to sit here and tell you this is the worst, this is the single worst, like, thing the Yankees have ever done, or this is a sign of a decaying organization, but hey, it's not good. Like, not a good thing that happened.
Definitely not a good thing.
I think they had to change directors, but the transfer of power was not good.
It was just too slow. And, like, I'm a big believer in, like, for a position like that, you do your interviews before you do your firing.
And you also lost something. You lost two prospects who I would have 100% ranked Wandy inside the top 10. 100%. You lost a top 10 prospect, and your system is losing depth. So you did need that. That is a big hit short term, and it will affect potentially your contention window if you don't develop and draft prospects well, which I will say I don't really think they're going to struggle to draft, because they do draft pretty well. But if you don't, I mean, all it takes is, the guy who I really thought was going to pop towards UCL, or Elmer got hurt, LaGrange got hurt.
Removes your margin for error.
Yes. Chase Hampton is like the cautionary tale for this, because I thought Chase Hampton was their best pitching prospect since Severino, and I still think peak Chase Hampton is only beat by Cam Schlittler in terms of prospects starting. Yeah, I really do. I do think Cam is, like, clearly the best starting pitching prospect they've had since Severino now. Like, he's so clearly
in. Really? Did you think that, like, on the way up, even, like, this last
when he debuted? Yes. When he debuted, the moment he debuted and he hit 100 miles per hour against Kyle Raleigh, at that point in time, he was stamped as their best pitching prospect.
Yeah, I mean, before that. Like, did you like him more than Elmer Rodriguez?
No. Way up. When, like, Elmer, okay, at, like, the point in which they reached AAA, I thought Elmer was better than Cam.
Yeah, that was more my question.
Like, Cam's ascent to that title is very quick. It's very much like, yeah, he's like the 10th best prospect to, oh my God, he's the best prospect they've had since Severy on the pitching side.
Yeah.
In the span of two weeks.
Him in the spring, because I saw him, I mean, he looked decent against, like, the real big league, like, I'm going to need you in the playoff Yankees during spring training. But obviously, like, that spring training, it's like a
he also didn't throw as hard as he is right now.
Dude, I've told the story 100 times, but I went to go see Lombard's debut in Akron, and he was on the mound throwing like 94.
It's just crazy. Like, I really don't know what else to say, man. Like, it's crazy. And I think the last part of this that one of the last things I want to touch on the prospect side here is that I think Elmer is, how do I put this? I'm not trying to, like, do too much here, but I'm trying to voice what I actually think about Elmer. And I think Cam was better when Cam debuted. Like, Cam, the total package of what Cam was once he hit the big leagues is better than what Elmer is right now. Mm-hmm. And then I start comparing to Heel and Warren and Davey and, you know, whoever else you want to think of in the last few years. I think Elmer surpassed Hampton for me, even at Hampton's best, although it was really close. That was a tough one for me, because I thought Hampton as best was just ridiculous. I think Elmer's better than the other guys. Like, he's got more command than Heel. He's got better stuff than Warren. And I honestly think he commands the baseball a little bit better. Like, there's just a little less of that hanging sweeper in the middle of the zone that just gets rocketed.
No, I mean, he's got the best command out of the group. And I think, honestly, like with him, I trust his floor more than anybody else's. I trust his floor even more than Cam's.
His changeup is a plus pitch, and I don't need to see him throw it in the big leagues. I think he will have a good changeup in the big leagues. Like, I look at Elmer, and I love the position he's in too for spring training, where he's going to get to show up and just If it clicks, he can make the team. If it doesn't click, he can go to AAA. I love that because I'm going to tell you right now, I'm saying this, I'm pre-narrative balling my narrative ball for spring. If it's March 2nd and Luis Gil is hurt and Ryan Yarbrough is pitching and Elmer Rodriguez is pitching in spring, if Elmer is outpitching Ryan Yarbrough, I'm going to be white hot if Elmer doesn't make the team. Because if Elmer looks, there's a certain thing I need. I know what it's going to look like for me to say it. I know what it's going to look like for me to say it.
But for me, the Yankees have been good about that, right?
Like they have been. That's why I'm like, the reason I'm saying white hot is because I know, I'm not saying he's just got to look decent. I know what it's got to look like for me
he's
to
gotta,
be like, he's going to
do the thing where you and I look at each other, raise the eyebrows like, oh, like it's go.
Right, and this is not box score watching either. Like, when I watch the game, I've got to see it. When I watch him pitch.
You know me, dude. I'm more of a feel guy than you
right.
are. I mean, not than you are. I'm more of a feel guy, and I'm less of a numbers guy than you are.
Yeah, totally fair.
So, I 100% agree with you. But I was a feel guy with Schlittler really early on.
And Schlittler obviously took a massive leap in terms of stuff, but I thought he showed that pitchability towards the end where we just saw him become fastball, sinker, cutter, and you're just like, wow, this guy can just move the ball around the zone. Like postseason, Cam Schlittler was, I was really excited by what he was doing.
And well, he's an information junkie too, dude. Like,
right, he's a very smart pitcher.
Yeah, like, and being in the dugout with him, he just like soaks up information like crazy and also holds himself to a crazy high standard when it comes to like output, like pitch output.
Well, I think the thing that the Yankees do well with these pitchers, like they find these really good athletes. Elmer's a really good athlete. Elmer is a phenomenal. Elmer Rodriguez, you can look at his frame and go, shortstop? Like if you just had the information, this is a baseball player and he was standing in front of you, but you just knew that he was a baseball player, you would think, does he play shortstop? Maybe some center field? Like he's a very good athlete. He dropped his arm angle by 15 degrees and did not skip a beat. Like his arm, he threw more innings than he's ever thrown before. He's got ridiculous athleticism. He's very wiry, rubbery almost. I love the profile. Cam Schlittler's a really good athlete too. People kind of overlook that. He's a very good athlete. I think there is I'm really excited for Elmer Rodriguez this year. And I think I'm not going to let the weight of every year the Yankees go without winning a World Series is it feels like there's more suffocating pressure. Mm-hmm. Not going to let it. I'm going to just, it's like that image. It's like this Taco Bell toast tastes so good. We don't got somebody telling you in your ear, whatever it may be. This Elmer Rodriguez is going to be so good. And I got somebody telling my ear, all the Yankees suck. Oh, you got to be, what about this, that, Hal, Cashman? Like, I'm not
going to. I'm excited to see baseball. We're 26 days away. When you watch
man.
Elmer, who do you see release-wise?
I see Michael King. I really do. And I know I mentioned Warren and King a lot. I see it in the sense that, like, it's a wide release. It's a low arm slot. It's really, like, it's pretty good, man. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I really like it.
Dude, one of my favorite watches, bro. Go watch it if you haven't seen it. Like, him versus Jonah Tong was an awesome battle.
It's just, like, this really cool matchup between two guys, too, who people count it out. They're underdogs. Like, I really love that. Yeah. And it's cool. We get to like kind of put a bow on it with Tong included in this conversation where the Yankees and Mets are really good at pitching development and they've really taken that leap and they've overhauled. They've kind of turned on a dime very quickly in that regard. I think with the Yankees and with their pitching, they have enough arms where I'm not worried that they're going to run out in mm-hmm. April. I trust their rotation to give me something. The bullpen, I think, does actually need like another high-end arm. And I second this sentiment for the Mets usually. And it's whenever I talk about them, like whenever I talk about baseball in a national conversation, whatever it may be, if you develop pitching well, like I have no reason. When you acquire a pitcher, I think higher of that pitcher. But I usually already like the pitcher. When you acquire them, you're like, oh, yeah, I like the pitcher.
It's like when a smart football coach hires a coordinator that's like, oh, like I'm not sure about that. It's like, oh, no, we trust him because he trusts him.
Right. I'll give you another example. I really liked Sean Manaea when he was a free agent after the Giants. When the Mets signed him, that wasn't stunning to me at all. I was like, yep, this guy, I like the signing. I like it. When Holmes signed with the Mets, I liked playing Holmes. Mm-hmm. Made sense to me. When Elmer was acquired by the Yankees, I was like, oh, I see it. Like, I see it. I get it. I totally get it. And it's not that this is not just mindlessly believing every pitcher the Yankees acquire is going to be good. I don't think the world of Paul Blackburn. I think they think higher of Blackburn than I do. But like they acquired Cade Winquest. Oh, okay, yeah, I see it. Yeah, like he throws hard. He's got a weird release. I see it, bro. Like, I totally get it.
Yeah, didn't he just hit 101 like 3 weeks ago? Like, he set a new record for himself.
He did that, and I think he also is throwing like a split change or a splitter now. Like, I saw him throwing on a story, and he's doing that. I saw
the workout him pump 101.
Jesus, he's a really good athlete too. Are you thinking about Dylan Coleman, minor league signing? He did, because the thing is, Winquest did throw a bullpen. I just don't remember the radar gun being there.
No, I was thinking about Dylan Coleman. That's a mind flip for me. My bad.
No, it's. I mean, again, they're two. Point it. I mean, they acquired a guy throwing 100. Point is, like, you want to tell me like the Yankees? I think highly of people who these organizations acquire is kind of my TLDR. But Chris, any final thoughts before we sign off here?
No, it was Dylan Coleman hit 101 on December 9th.
Yeah, that's, I mean, Jesus, right? Like, good Lord. I think when we look at the New York Yankees and we look at their offseason and we kind of tie a bow on it, and hopefully there's more that happens, but we'll see. This is a team that has a pretty interesting chunk of like talented pitchers who I'm excited to see in spring training. Like, that's the first. I'm going to have an article on this eventually, where I just kind of break down like the three things I'm really looking forward to watching in spring training. Elmer's going to be one of them. Pitching is just going to be a general conversation point of, I'm really curious to see which guys pop in camp. And Chris, I'm really excited to see Elmer specifically. I'm very excited.
Me too, dude. I've had him on this other monitor just like looking at some of the arm angle stuff, dude. Like, I think his floor is just so high, Ryan.
Well, it's also just we could go on and on about Elmer,
bro,
dude.
Here's the thing. I always tell you, like, my favorite thing is pitchability.
Mm-hmm.
And like being able to like to tunnel things and set guys up just does something to me, man.
I think he's got better command than people think.
I think so too. Like, when you watch him, it definitely looks like you can tell when he gets in a mode where he's like clearly setting guys up.
Yes. And he's, again, it's really just easy, bro. Mm-hmm. It's easy for him, bro. It really is easy for him to hit the right spots in the zone. And he's got every single movement profile that you could possibly want. Curveball, sweeper, changeup, sinker, four seam cutter. And I think he mentioned on Yankees Farm, I could be wrong, I think he did an interview there, and he was talking about like some stuff he's going to work on. I could be wrong. I could be very wrong. But he's locked, man. He made so many strides last year, and he's 22. Spent most of last year my age, bro. Like, he's a couple months older than me.
You think you can see a velo uptick or no?
It's possible. I mean, he was throwing with a whole new arm angle.
He was the lightest player.
MLB.com reported he added like 20 pounds last year. Mm-hmm. I wonder how much of the weight he kept. And also, remember, he dropped his arm angle. Like, there's, if he even goes from sitting 95.5 to 96.5, he's probably, I think it's a pit player who I'm personally very excited to watch, and I'm excited to watch him in spring. Chris, any final thoughts you got on the Yankees?
Just kind of excited for spring training.
Yeah, and I think, again, I'm at the point where I'm kind of tired of hashing out like how good I think the Yankees are versus how other people feel about the Yankees at this point. It's we're here. We're in January. I want it to be March, and I want games to start. Honestly, I want like 5 spring training games, and I want the season to start. That's kind of how my brain is. Like, I'm going to be bored of spring training.
World Baseball Classic.
Oh my God. Oh my, I have my hat over there, bro. Christopher Sanchez is pitching for DR. It's over. It's over for the United States. I hate to do this to my boy Aaron Judge. I really do. I really hate to do this. Cover of MLB The Show. Sorry, bro. You ain't winning shit in this World Baseball Classic. Not with my Dominican Republic in this tournament locked and loaded. I'm doing the Soto Shuffle again. Like, I get to root for my boy one more time. I posted the video. You've watched this Dragon Ball movie where it's the one where Gogeta shows up. It's like the first Gogeta appearance.
Yeah.
And at the end, Goku's like, he's like, it was awesome. He's like, why are you thanking me? I should be thanking you. And he's like, goodbye, my friend. And Vegeta goes. That's how I'm going to feel with Soto, bro. The second that tournament's over, I get 30 days to love Juan Soto and watch him play for my team one more time. And then I got to go put him away for 4 years.
There you go.
3 years.
There you have it.
So, yeah. Hope you guys enjoyed this video. If you guys like this episode, like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell. You can check out Fireside Yankees on all of your favorite social media platforms, including Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and of course this YouTube page. We are live on Mondays and Wednesdays now, so if you're listening to this tonight, you're going to be 24 hours from now able to hear me live tomorrow night. And check out the website, empiresportsmedia.com. Chris's channel, Dead Air Sports, is going to be linked in the description. And we also do a baseball podcast, Fireside Baseball. That'll be linked there as well. Chris already has the notebooks up by now. It's 6:50. So, yeah, it's been up for like 50 minutes now. Cool. So you guys should check it out after you watch this. And the link to that will be in the description, too. Appreciate you all so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys next one. Peace out, everybody. Perfect.